got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA.
Nerd rage. Nerd rage.
Now here are the nerds.
Good evening, nerds. You are listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, coming to you almost live from downtown Greeley, Colorado, in the Allo Communications Studios. Wow. Been quite a few weeks of nerddom news, popularity, excitement, everything else. Lots of stuff going on. By the way, we are short a nerd today. We are missing the...
Duh. Calm on it.
Yes, he is indisposed this evening, but we'll be back most likely next week, and we'll have a full cast and ensemble for you then. But for
he's indisposed, but we did not dispose of him.
Oh, well played, sir. Well played. So, but I'm super excited about today's episode and today's show, because we're literally going to go over the last two episodes of Andor, including the one that dropped today.
Yes. I was. You and Nick seem to be different types of people than me. I am the type of person, I have to stay up late and watch something. I can't watch it in the morning. In the morning, that's not the way things work. If I'm going to watch something in the morning, it has to be a comedy. Rarely can I watch something in the morning and enjoy it.
Well, I think
unless I'm pulling an all-nighter.
Well, I think the fact that I'm old enough to be both you and Nick's father... That
you're not old enough to be my father.
I'm close.
But, I don't know about that. We'll compare ages.
We could do that at some other time. But we'll just say that I can appreciate the fact that I like getting up early on Wednesdays and immediately jumping on to see what's going on. And I have not been disappointed, not once, in this entire series.
No. It's... very difficult to find a series that's like that. And season one of Stranger Things, I could say that, because season one of Stranger Things never disappointed throughout the entire show. It's the same way with this. Everywhere you turn around, and there are people who don't like slow shows. I just enjoy this no matter whether it's going slow, whether, you know, we're having like a little political conversation. It's incredible.
I think that the whole concept of this being a spy thriller and not being labeled as an action movie
is
perfect.
Thriller.
It is totally a thriller.
Oh, absolutely thrilling. And the most thrilling episode... like, it wasn't thrilling for the acting, for the action. It was thrilling more so for everything else.
Oh, the suspense.
Because you're on the edge of your seat, mm-hmm. waiting for the place to be robbed. You're just like, what's going to happen next? Oh, man, what's going to happen next? And the action happens. You're like, yeah, this is great action. But that's the worst part of the episode. I don't want to say worst, because there was nothing bad about that episode. But you're just like... sitting there going, oh, man, and it's wall-to-wall, just on the edge of your seat excitement. This is such a great show. And we're through episode 10. So far, it's, you know, I don't want to compare it to anything just yet. I don't want to give it a rating just yet, because it has two more episodes to go, and it could always just go episode 8 on us.
Don't
it could
say
go
it.
Season 7 and 8 of Game of Thrones on us.
No, I think one of the things I'm really enjoying about the show is that the pacing and the cadence and the structure is never the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it as we're going to talk about both shows today, that episode 9, we saw a really big part at the beginning about what the Empire's doing on Ferrix and how they're dealing with that. And you're getting a lot of the ISB involvement. And we really see that. We get a little bit of the nuance of what's going on in the prison. You get some of that element of Andor. And, you know, you start talking about, and I'm blanking on the guy, Andy Serkis's character. It's like Klo or Co or whatever else. But you've got those elements in there, and they're going back and forth. But then you get Cyril almost like, fallen on himself about his, I don't want to say his love, but his obsession with you know, the ISB and the work that Miro is doing, that he's like trying to throw himself at her, but not in a romantic way.
He's almost in love with her because he's in love with the
Emperor.
I keep changing my mind on him. I thought he was an idealist.
Yeah, no.
And then I thought he was just someone who's looking for, you know, a reason to believe in something. I think now he's both. I think he's looking for a reason. He was someone who's lost, who had nothing. Who's just one of those people who will follow the leader. I think he's a combination of both.
But I think
he's the most dangerous, other than the Emperor and Darth Vader, I think he is the most dangerous person this series has. Because he, even more dangerous than Darth Maul.
He has the potential.
The potential,
just because
of
his fanaticism with what they're trying to do and where they're going with it, and his obsession with Cassian, because he feels like Cassian ruined his life, and he is hell-bent on trying to get his life back. And literally, you know, he said it in one of the previous episodes, he wants to clear his name. He wants to prove that he's right, prove that he was correct in the work that he's doing, and he wants to do it, you know, in the name of the Empire. And it's like, it is getting crazy. And then we're seeing the elements of the prison start to break down, because we see the aspect of, well, they screwed up and they released a prisoner on, you know, on level 7, and then he showed up on level 2, and everybody figured it out, that going, wait, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, they were just transferring me. Nobody's ever going home. And they figure it out, and they literally wash out 100 men in order to do that. And that's what they need. That's kind of that spark that, you know, Cassian was looking for, and he's trying to get Kino, which is Andy Serkis's character, to listen to. And they're like, oh, you know, we don't have a lot to lose. And they've already figured out a plan. They know how to make it work. And, you know, and the scene, well, I can't talk about that because what happens in episode 10? No, we got to wait. Yeah. I got to hold on to it. But yeah.
What I really like so far, and we'll talk through episode 9 of Andy Serkis's character, is he is so used to being there. It's like in Shawshank Redemption, where you have the guy who's institutionalized, you know, I can't remember his name. It's been a while since I've seen it. But he's the old man who's kind of the wise man. Only in this case, it's the old man who's kind of the militant leader. The, you will follow me or else we will all have to deal with the guards. He has been there so long, he is used to it, and he is being used by the guards as kind of a guard. And so he's so used to that power. And I don't want to say he's addicted to the power. He's just used to it. That is his life. And so he's afraid to kind of change that. He's afraid to kind of go with something different because he's afraid to be punished. He's afraid to have everybody, you know, someone fail, because he doesn't want them to be punished, because it'll reflect bad on him. And he has 6 months left or something in his sentence?
Well, I don't remember.
Or so they say.
They kind of show the clocks and a couple ones, but the guy that dies, and, you know, they...
Or maybe it's him.
Yeah, he only had like 41 shifts left. So he was like literally at the end of his line, and, you know, and the doctor that shows up is like, no, he's not going home. Literally, this is the best. And literally, you're seeing him euthanize a prisoner because he's like, this is far better than anything else he's going to get, because he's never getting out of here.
And how dark is that, where you're a doctor? Like, he's... And the doctor is not a real... Like, he's a real doctor, but he's a prisoner.
Yeah.
So this is what the Empire is doing. They're cutting so many corners that they have very few guards.
Yeah.
And the medical staff, they're prisoners themselves.
Well, they need all the manpower to do whatever it is. And I keep trying to jump ahead. But yeah, they're literally overstretched to the nth degree everywhere. And that is showing up. And we see that right at the end of the episode. And I thought it was so incredible when we hear about that. And Kino's sitting there and he realizes what's going on. They're never going to get released. And Cassian asks him the question. He's asked him several times before. He's like, how many guards are there on duty? And he's like, never more than 12. So we see that switch in Kino. from trying to protect Cassian and protect the rest of the guys from Cassian to going, yeah, we're out of luck. There's no other options here. So I'll give you the information you're asking for to kind of plan on some of this stuff. And they do a great job. We see Mon Mothma trying to figure out what she's going to do. And I, you know, knowing the elements that are coming with that, and they have played this really well to where it's dark, it's ugly.
This actually makes me care about Mon Mothma.
Oh, yeah.
Before, it was like, Mon Mothma's just this gal who was like, Manny Bothans gave their
Manny lives. Bothans died. And I still don't know who Manny Bothans is. He, you know, I think he was a guy that just kind of, you know, maybe he, you know, jumped off a cliff or something, or he broke his leg on his way out, so...
Yeah.
It's one guy actually, named Manny. That's all it is.
This series, like, it really does make you care about all the little things in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You don't think about the little things. You're like, oh, this is a perfect example of taking something that could be a, oh, that thing moment, and actually making you go, oh, wow.
And then building
really,
on that.
Mm-hmm. This is great writing.
Yeah.
I don't want to say brilliant writing because I don't want to overuse brilliant, but this is such good writing.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. So they have done an amazing job. Well, I feel like we really just glossed over episode 9. We'll get into it a little bit more at the end of the show. So we're going to skip around a little bit, give everybody a chance. If you haven't seen episode 10 yet, we're going to spoiler alert the heck out of the last segment, and we're going to go full on spoilers in the last segment. So stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Nerd Show, coming to you from the Allo Communication Studios in downtown Greeley, Colorado, U.S. of A., on this day after the election day, which we are not going to talk about on this show.
Okay, so first of all, with the election...
What?
I was about to
What's
break
an
into
election?
The election.
No, we're not going to talk about the election. That was yesterday.
If you want a good transition, D.C., elected Ooh. To hire James Gunn.
Yes, they did. That's kind of an interesting approach. I think a good approach.
A very good approach.
And an opportunity for them to leverage what he brings to the table and his knowledge and expertise in order to hopefully do some really good things with DC moving forward. We saw, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago after we saw Black Adam, that you know, Henry Cavill has agreed to come back. He's going to do Superman again. So that's exciting. We're hearing another Superman movie.
And it's supposed to be a more joyful Superman movie.
Yep. Which, you know, for some people, they liked the darker element of it, which...
And we can see why this world, I think sometimes, especially with social media, feels a little darker. But it was almost too dark.
Yeah.
Superman's never been really... that dark. Leave that to Batman.
I agree from his persona, that's true. And in the films early on, you think about the Christopher Reeves Superman movies that we saw, they were like that. There were moments of darkness, but overall they were very uplifting. They were very positive. You had this goofy Clark Kent kid who just was such a dork, and he was almost, you know, sophomoric in nature, the way that he acted. And so there was that element to it. And I don't know that Henry Cavill is capable of playing that type of a Clark Kent. And I really don't want to see that anyways. But I would like to see something a little bit more positive and uplifting, where it isn't as, you know, dark and menacing and literally dark from a visual perspective. You know, the lights off and everything else that we've seen in the past. So I would appreciate that. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I think what they're going to do is they're not going to reboot. I don't think they're going to reboot. I think they're going to say, give it kind of a, you know, you had a breakfast that didn't satisfy. Let's start with a good lunch.
Let's go with a good lunch. Yeah. I like that. I like that approach. And I think James Gunn has the opportunity to give us a good midday meal and then set us up for a really satisfying dinner and maybe even a late night snack or whatever else. And hopefully between this, we've got a Flash movie that we're supposed to see. There's a new Shazam movie that's coming out. Mm-hmm. And that one, for whatever reason, I thought it was a fun movie, and I enjoyed the fact
it was really fun
because it centered around this, you know, 13, 14 year old kid that now is, you know, he's Shazam and he's got all these superpowers.
Shazam.
Yep. So, yeah, I noticed that no lightning came down and I didn't get any younger. So that's all right.
It hit the ceiling.
Oh, it wasn't very strong then. But I feel like there's moments in there where that will work. And Shazam was a good movie to do that. And I think they'll be able to build on it and do well with it. I'm looking forward to the next one as it comes out with all the kids, kind of that little trope. And it'll be interesting to see. Keep hearing different things about what they're planning on and what we're expecting to see. I heard...
I hear a lot of... They're trying to focus more on TV shows, which now that HBO Max has canceled everything,
yeah,
which they've canceled a lot, including... Very sadly, they canceled Westworld.
But I know.
We can get into that another show.
It's okay. But at least with Westworld... They canceled it where you don't have this gigantic cliffhanger that you're never going to get solved again. It was a little bit of one, but
yeah.
Nothing that you couldn't just, yeah.
It was a cliffhanger, but I kind of forgot that the fifth season was coming. It actually kind of, in a way, if you think about it, it ended on a philosophical question.
Yes.
So I don't want to spoil anything. Yeah. Watch all four seasons. Season three, you should power through that because season three wasn't very good. First half of season four went slow and then suddenly went fast. And you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, it went from, and it was a little bit confusing and they played around a lot with, you know, the beyond or whatever they were calling it, that the AIs and stuff were being able to go to. The thing with Westworld was I felt like it ended on a good spot that you could just let it lie. You didn't need to go any further. And I know Ed Harris had hinted, that there were going to be another season and that they were working towards it, but I don't think it needed to be. And I kept thinking that they did such a great job in the first season and then into the second season of really focusing on Evan Rachel Wood's character and her kind of being the center. And I liked that. And they just kept deviating and going around in circles and they kept trying to bring it back in. So I thought it was fine the way that it ended and we don't need to go through that anymore.
I kind of feel the same way, even though I also kind of want more. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. Back to DC.
That was a nice right-hand turn.
Yeah, they have the opportunity to do new shows, and they have the opportunity to take a look at what Marvel is doing and saying, look at all these shows that you have. What is working? What is not working? What do we have in all of our comics that we can adapt into shows? What can we combine, adapt into shows? What can we write or create in originally that we can maybe turn into comics? And I think that they have a tremendous opportunity, especially with, like I said, HBO Max just canceled a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
It's like they're saying, okay, we're rebooting too. Everybody's restarting. I'd like to see them start with a Rise of Ra's al Ghul storyline, an entire 10-episode show of how he came to power.
Now, would you have Liam Neeson do it?
No, because I would want a younger Ra's al Ghul. I don't know the full story of him. All I know is that his family was wronged somehow. His family was murdered, mm-hmm. and he went on like a huge killing spree.
He was a mercenary. And he
threw some people in that
giant pit.
That's
where Bane came from and all that other stuff. So, yeah.
So I would want a younger version of him.
Kind of get back into his origin story if you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. And that could be interesting. I did see, hopefully it's not been canceled because I haven't seen it, but they were talking about doing a Pennyworth series.
I think they have that going.
Is that going?
I think that's in its third season, and I don't know if that's going to be an official part of it. They do have to do something with Martian Manhunter because he already exists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the post-credit scene was never added into the official. I think it was always cut out, but I kind of want to see a Martian Manhunter. He's not that interesting to me, so maybe like a 6-episode thing on him.
I love how you're thinking it's not that interesting. 6 yeah. episodes, so I spend 3-4 hours watching, you know, content about him.
Yeah, I'd like to know something about him. 3-4 episodes. Red Hood.
Red Hood would be really interesting to do, and. Nightwing, I think, would be really interesting to do. And again,
you could do the Robins series where
totally
you have
could.
Like multiple Robins teaming up.
And we've seen that in Teen Titans, and they've done that
really?
A little bit. Yeah, so they.
I've only seen the first 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah, so they
and
did.
It's decent.
It is decent, and you see sort of that transition away from. You know, him being Robin and then wanting to go out on his own and maybe kind of become Nightwing and then the second Robin showing up and them all working together. But you see the malevolence of, you know, Batman following Robin everywhere he's going and just kind of keeping tabs on him and eyes on him. And so there's a lot of that distrust that was there that you could continue to build on it. I think I've through the first maybe season and a half, and it's a good series. There's so much going on, and I've had to pick and choose what I've wanted to watch, and it's been hard to get back into anything. But we will. Apparently, Mike is playing me off so that we've got to go to another commercial break. So we will do that. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what's coming up from Marvel, from Lucasfilm, from Star Wars, and some things that we're going to see in the next several months, and then. See where the rest of the show takes us. So stick around. We'll be right back. With the Nerd Show and the Nerds, minus Darth Harmonic, today on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's voice for all things nerddom.
From the Allo Communications Studios.
Yeah, I said that the last time.
Okay, good.
Should I say it again?
I don't know.
From the Allo Communications Studios.
They allow us to broadcast.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry, I like making jokes.
Yeah, see, this is where we need video in the studio, and you could see my eyes roll.
Yeah, people can see me smiling and laughing at my own jokes.
Laughing at the fact that you
know. I don't know about that one.
Thank you, Clay.
Yeah, so lots of new stuff. I was trying to look ahead, and of course, every time I do, you know, what's coming, there's a million things going on there. But we have The Mandalorian that's coming out in February.
Is that coming out in February already?
February, yep. Mandalorian Season 3, that looks great.
I need to remake the list.
You know, and there's also things we're talking about, the spinoff for Ahsoka. So we know that that's coming. There's a lot of excitement around that. And then just this past week, there had been talk about it before, but there are now some first looks and some screenshots and some synopsis being dropped about a Star Wars series called The Acolyte, which takes place, you know, hundreds of years prior to, you know, the New Hope and the Battle of Yavin in an era known as the High Republic. And there's been a lot of work that Disney and Lucasfilm have been doing around this as far as the written word. There are probably a dozen books that have all been released around this time period. And so there's a ton of content. There's a lot of things they talk about. You know, they are referencing thousands of Jedi spread all over the galaxy that are, you know, these peacekeepers, and you've got these other elements. But I'm going to read this for you. This is off of Screen Crush, and this is the synopsis that they posted. The Acolyte is a mystery thriller that will take viewers into a galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era. A former Padawan reunites her Jedi master to investigate a series of crimes, but the forces they confront are more sinister than ever anticipated. So it sounds like to me that we're going to be doing a lot more of the Andor type of thematic you know, pacing, but with more of a Jedi involvement, which I'm okay with. I know a lot of people have been hating on Andor because it's not Star Wars. And I love it. I think it's totally Star Wars. It's just not lightsabers and, you know, and TIE fighters and X-Wings every, you know, 15 minutes. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it, too. And I keep saying it doesn't feel like Star Wars. To me, it doesn't have that Star Wars feel. Just because it says Star Wars, it doesn't have to have that Star Wars feel. You disagree with me, but that's fine. You know this whole – so what does Alkalite refer to? Is that like a name like Andor?
So no. It's actually a series of beings who are like dark side adepts, you know, dark side sensitive. There's – I'm currently reading a book.
Oh, so they're going to run into the Alkalites?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that's a spoiler. For all of us novices.
All right. Well, let me help you with that. A person assisting the celebrant in a religious service or procession. That is the definition of an acolyte.
Oh, okay.
An acolyte. So you think about like sort of a serious fanboy that is really working through it. And they're making references to it. I'm currently reading a book that takes place, you know, in the sequel series of the Star Wars trilogies, where it's Luke and Lando going after Ochi, who was the guy who they find his ship, if you remember, at the end of, I believe it's episode 9, when they're trying to figure out where they are going to find the Wayfinders and go to Exegol and everything else. And so they are referencing these dark side acolytes that were a part of the Sith kind of legacy and Exegol and everything else. So we're jumping into that era hundreds of years before that happened to kind of build up this, you know, that this whole dark side Sith dynasty thing has always been going on, even when they thought that they had gotten rid of the Sith and everything else, that it never went away. It's like a bad rash.
It never went away.
It never completely goes away. Even though you think you've got it all cleaned up, it just one little thing.
Don't you always have to have that balance?
Well, yeah, of course you do. And that's the hard part for some people in their thinking about it. Well, you know, the whole, you know, the ability for Luke to be the, you know, being the prophecy and bring balance. Well, balance is just as you're saying, there's a little bit of both. And in order to have the good, the light side, you got to have a balance that is the dark side. And maybe it's spread out amongst thousands of people. And I think that's what we were seeing. That's what we're going to see in this series, that you have thousands of Jedi that are all a part of the light side. And so that balance is going to be some pretty interesting dark side Siths, which have done that for years, you know, the rule of two. And we hear about that a little bit in some of the backstories that we saw around that. And they're continuing to play that up. So,
and maybe not all the Sith were using lightsabers. And correct. Maybe not all of them knew that they were Sith. Maybe they were just behind the scenes doing nefarious things.
Ooh.
Untrained.
Nefarious. Nice word.
Nefarious.
I just keep thinking of, you know, Minions and Dr. Nefario kind of thing. So I'm having a whole flash into that realm. But anyways, talking about lots of those elements in there. So we've got some great Star Wars stuff coming up. We talked a little bit a couple weeks ago about the Tales of the Jedi, the animated series, and how that brought some of those elements to it and brought some, you know, insight into some of the elements that we're seeing in between episode 1 and 2 and even before episode 1 and 2. So there's a lot of good stuff that they are putting out in Star Wars right now. And we were talking about Marvel, and they've kind of had some busts and they've kind of had some successes, and DC's kind of seen the same thing. And Star Wars is no different. We've seen some of those that have been sort of busts, but I think they've really upped their game with Kathleen Kennedy and Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau really running things. And I think you've got Dave Filoni kind of being the mastermind behind where they're going with a lot of this stuff. And I'm enjoying it tremendously. And I hope it continues on this really good path.
I hope so, too. I'm starting to realize that, and I think a lot of people are starting to realize that movies are kind of overrated, that just doing the movies is... I just don't think it's the answer anymore.
Well,
I don't think.
Yeah.
I think in a few years we're gonna no longer have Marvel movies. But probably in 10 years, maybe we won't be doing Marvel movies anymore. Maybe we'll just be doing Marvel TV shows.
See, and I'm going to disagree with you there because I think there's always going to be a really great place for movies because I love, and I know there's a lot of people that love going to the movies.
Yeah, but if you have a tremendous flop.
Well, yeah, but you could spend just as much money, if not more, trying to build a TV series that could also be a flop. And
that is true.
You know, so I think that there's a balance there, too. It's like, how much do you need to get into a show, a series, a topic, characters, or whatever else you want to do with that to where, you know, do you need 2 hours or do you need more? And I think we're seeing, like with Andor, like with The Mandalorian, like with the new Ahsoka series that's going to be coming out, that you can leverage that storytelling tool to get into the weeds of something instead of making people figure out what happened in a set of movies that you don't have that time to really be able to do with all the characters. And so I think the things that are happening, the things they're working with have been really good. Before I forget, I just completely forgot until just now that John Bernthal, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, had confirmed that he will be back as the Punisher in the Daredevil reboot, the Daredevil Reborn, which I'm excited about. You've got Charlie Cox back. You've got some of the main players in that. And so I'm really excited that they are not, you know, washing that away and trying to bring in a whole new cast of characters like we've seen in some other areas, that they've got them all back. And I'm loving that. I think it's great. And I was a huge fan of the Daredevil series on Netflix. And I hope that Disney and Marvel are brave enough to keep it that edgy and keep it that dark and that gritty. Because Daredevil and the Punisher series, I think, have to be there. You can't get lighthearted. And the stuff that we saw in She-Hulk is probably more lighthearted than I would like to see Daredevil. And I hope that that is literally the brightest that we see that. But anyways, we're going to take another break. When we come back, it is going to be all over, spoiler alert. We're going to talk about Andor episode 10. Be right back. Have shivers right now. Welcome back to the Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFK, coming to you from the Owl Communications Studios in downtown Greeley. Micah, before we get any farther, we got to hit the button because this is going to be full on.
Nerd Show stamp of approval.
Well, it's...
Sorry, that was the wrong button.
That was the wrong button. Push the right button, would you? There you go.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, poor Micah. Sometimes we're not always in sync, and I usually think it's my fault because he's a much better producer than I'm a radio host.
Am I? You are.
Well,
I was so busy paying attention to the music. That's the Andor
so good.
Main theme from episode 8, and I noticed that they change it so often, and sometimes it's just so very emotional, and sometimes it's just very dark and fierce and... It's always the same theme, but just changed just a little bit. And I love how creative. It's not the best music in Star Wars, but it's perfect
it
for
so
the show.
It is so good for this. Yes.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
You couldn't put John Williams' hopeful sound into this and make it fit.
Well, as we said earlier in the show, that this is a suspense spy thriller. And it absolutely is that. Every bit of it is. And
I will admit to this, I did almost fall out of my chair the other day. I was literally on the edge of my seat, getting closer and closer to the computer screen.
Like, oh,
and
my
it's
gosh.
Like, whoop.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I have had that moment multiple times where the episode ends and the credits roll and I stop and go, okay, I'm much closer to the television than I was when I started this episode, and it's so good. And just like we talked about with the previous episode, this episode really focuses on two, and there are three different sub-segments that happen within, but really you've got one main one, and then you've got a couple little storylines that get sprinkled in. But, you know, we see nothing of the ISB in this episode. It's all around Narcona 5 in the prison.
You see like a little tiny bit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You see the one little snippet because they have to set up what's going to happen later with Luthern in order to do that. So you're absolutely right. See, I forgot about that, even though that sets it up. But you see,
I didn't forget about it.
You see that? No, I did.
No, I'm just saying, like, there's a character that I really enjoy, and she was in it, and I was like, okay,
oh,
okay. I can't forget about her. She's...
Yeah. No, you very much her enjoy...
Oh, yeah. She scares the crap out of me.
Oh, she has got the potential to be... Like I said, she is the Yesenia Sard of the current Star Wars canon. I mean, she absolutely is. She is that, and I love the fact they're doing that with them. But we see, you know, the acceptance of what reality is going to be for them going forward on the prison, and we see Kino accept it, and they're going to do something about it. And so we see them working through that. I love the way that they had all those parts, and they use those as weapons in the battle sequence. And so when they decide from 5-2-D decides that they are going to go after this, that they bring every tool that they have at their disposal, and the way that they leverage the set and everything around them, and they did a fantastic job with it. And I love the way they did it. It really set the show up well, and it made it feel real.
The fact that they kill some of the people, they kill some of the people that you think are going to survive.
Yeah.
Like they focus on certain people,
mm-hmm.
and then they just kill them.
Yeah, it was sort of like, hey, this is the guy. And I know that was sort of a Game of Thrones thing, that they were like, every time you got to like a character, they would kill them off. And it wasn't quite to that level, but you see the one guy at the table, he goes, you know, I'm already dead. All right, well, you know, and then he ends up being dead, and the other one doesn't. And you've got all of those elements going back and forth in that sequence. But I loved how when they get to the control room, Cassian makes Kino be the voice. He's like, you have to do this. You have to be the one that's going to get everybody on board and understand what's going to happen. And we see the brutality and the lethal way that Cassian acts. Once again, walks in, and they've got all three of the Imperial guys standing there in the control room, and he says something to him. Guy starts to push back, and he just shoots the one guy dead right where he stood. And so you see his ability to do whatever it takes, going back to the movie. Some of us have done terrible things in the name of the rebellion, and we see that go through.
This is the most realistic depiction of humanity, I think, that we've seen in Star Wars.
And the scene where they're running through the prison, and there is that main, you know, like the, you know, the prison warden that comes out all, you know, like some badass, you know, at the very beginning of when we get to the prison, and he's got this smirk on his face, and, you know, he's got his boots on, and he's, you know, sticking him with the sticks and everything else. And when you see him and his crew huddling down, hidden in that one little room area, and he just looks like he is terrified. And I thought that was such a great, you know, flip for that character.
What was that line that Andor said? He said something about power. Power doesn't panic. Those guys never had power.
Yeah.
They had the illusion of power.
They had the illusion of power.
They had those
control.
Little sticks to poke people and say, hey, look, this is power. They never had power. The Empire never gave it to them. The Empire, they underfunded. This is like this. It's, you could go so political on this thing and just analyze it from every point of view. This is really fascinating. Everything about this show is fascinating.
Yeah.
From how it's directed, how it's written, to you could try to draw whatever parallels you want. It's really such a good show. And I think if you don't like science fiction, if you don't like Star Wars, this could be your bridge into Star Wars.
It could be. And two other elements of this episode that I really want to make sure we talk about. One, the whole element where Mon Mothma is meeting this guy and the banker, and what does he ask for? Her daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like
he didn't say your daughter's hand in marriage.
No, he just said, I want an introduction, but that's where they're going with this. And it was so ugly. And she was so passionate about not wanting to be a part of it. And
she says no to him.
And she says no to him. And then he says, you know, think about it. And she goes, you know, I won't think about it again. I've already given you my answer. And then when he says, that's the only untruthful thing that you have said this entire meeting, and he gets up and leaves, and you can see the panic on her face because she knows they need it.
Yeah, she's like shuddering, and it even says with closed captioning on, shuddering.
Yep. And then you go to our ISB mole, which we were always figuring there had to have been one in there, and now we learn who he is.
The dude with the mustache.
The dude with the mustache, and he's now got a daughter, and he's freaking out because now he...
He wants to be a father.
Yeah, he wants to be able to do that with his, you know, daughter and wants to raise her.
And he doesn't want her to be in harm's way because of his actions.
Well, and we see Lutheran talk about, you know, what everything he gave up on and all that stuff, and it was just crazy.
How about that speech?
Oh, really good. And now you get an idea of the length of time this is, because he said for 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is literally pre-rebellion. Well, we're getting right at the very edge of when Palpatine took control is when all this is happening. But you see him go through that, and he's telling him, you know, you can't go out. And the ruthlessness in which he says, sorry, you know, Krieger's going to lose. You know, they need to. If we don't show up, they're going to know there's a mole in the ISB, and we can't give them that. And those 50 lives aren't worth as much as this one that's a mole inside the ISB. And the amount of pressure and the amount of weight and overwhelming thought of that for an individual who's believing in his cause, and now he's a dad and going, wait, you're literally going to sacrifice 50 lives that you could save in order to keep me embedded into this group and make sure that my cover doesn't get blown is just ruthless and ugh.
It's the pragmatic decision, but
it absolutely is.
As Lutheran was saying, he has sacrificed everything. He's sacrificed his ability to have relationships. He's sacrificed. I mean, the dude is a broken man. You look at him throughout the series, his smiles, every time he smiles, other than that one time where he laughs because of that victory, every smile of his is forced. It is fake.
It really is.
He's a fake man.
Well, and you see the dichotomy between him and Mon Mothma and what they're battling, you know, basically in parallel and how they're dealing with it differently. But that's all the time we have for today's show, and I hope that everybody enjoyed it and got a quick glimpse on what we already thought about Andor Episode 10. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. You stay nerdy.